Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Well, welcome to the Redmen TV. It's the final word. Liverpool beating Burnley at Turf Moor by 3-0. I'm joined by Stee, by James and by John Reid to discuss this one in depth and detail. Stee, 4 games in, 12 points on the board, top of the league, won 13 league games on the bounce, a new record for Liverpool Football Club in the top flight. It's been a bit of a good start.
Yeah, as a start's go, you'll take it, won't you? Fantastic, to be honest. I thought probably our best performance of the season at both ends of the pitch. I think we've attacked really well in the other couple of games, been a bit leaky at the back. You know, all three games, you know, you look at them, everyone's had chances against us. Norwich had chances, Southampton and obviously Arsenal had big chances as well. We didn't really give Burnley a sniff. They didn't really do anything that really absolutely concerned you, which is odd because I think they've scored every time they've played against us up until this point in the league. So probably the best performance of the season, albeit only a handful of games. And to go into an international break with that performance, it just makes everything better. If you go in into a break on the back of a draw or a loss, you're kind of mulling over it for 2 weeks and you can't wait to go again and you can't do anything about it. We've just strolled into the international break. Top of the league, everything's perfect. There's a lot of chaos going on around. In the Premier League, everyone's a bit bananas. Liverpool have just got on with it, done the business quite professionally. And I think it's quite refreshing, isn't it, that everything just seems calm. And it's very un-Liverpool-like for a number of years. So, yeah, there's nothing other, like, in terms of worries. I think that game dispelled a lot of those for me. I was worried about us defensively, and I thought Barnes and Wood in particular would cause issues. I mean, I don't think Adrian really had to do anything, make a save of note. So, yeah, fantastic.
There was an early save, wasn't there, was it Wood, I think it was, where he gets down to his right-hand side, palms it out, Matip then clears the ball. Yeah. But other than that was probably the only shot that I remember being on target, James. And, you know, it's a very tough place to go to, Burnley.
Yeah.
And we made it look rather easy in the end, didn't we?
Yeah, and you've got to think as well, it's not too far gone since they were, you know, qualifying for the Europa League due to the home performances that they were making. They're a good team, that they've got a solid base there. And it's a club that it's probably not going to go on to achieve any more than what they did a few years ago, getting to that Europa League. But they've got a solid fan base, they've got a solid club, you know, they've had the manager for a long time as well. And when you do play them, you do have to have that just sort of awareness, because they can cause your team troubles, essentially. And, you know, especially at their ground where they're most confident. You know, and anyone who plays Liverpool now, they'll just be thinking, I'm just up for this game. This is Liverpool. This is the biggest game along with City in the Premier League. Let's go and do everything we can. And we snotted them, and that's just what we've got to do. We've got to be aggressive towards these teams.
John, were you surprised at the starting 11 being unchanged from Arsenal?
No, not really. I think one thing the manager's done really well, and you've obviously heard a few players comment on it in the press, is I think he's kind of translated what we did last season very well into them, keeping them hungry for this season. And just kind of rode that wave, and, you know, Stee touches on kind of the defensive issues there. We've known the front three are carrying us a little bit at the minute. Like, not completely, but, you know, we've had some troubles at the back. So I think sticking with that team, you know, obviously we do the breaking between the games as well, I think was the best thing you could do. Just get more lads, more minutes, more confidence, and then, you know, slowly drip feed other people in. I think the subs as well in the game, showing you that he brings Chamberlain on, I think kind of shows you where certain people are. Again, that he's trying to get people like Chamberlain minutes to get him up to where he needs to be, you know, rather than putting, like, say, lads like Milner on, you know, he could probably drop in for 20 minutes, half an hour of a game, and he'd be fine.
Yeah, I must admit, I was slightly surprised at the starting 11. I didn't think he'd go with the unchanged lineup. And for me, you know, when we were driving down to Burnley, and I'd thought it all week to be thirsty, I thought to myself, this is a game for Milner. Yeah. I thought, you know, because he doesn't play international football, I was thinking to myself, you want to get him 90 here because he's going to have nearly 2 weeks off now. And if he doesn't play a full 90 here, are you losing that match sharpness that he's built up over pre-season in the first few minutes? Because he plays against Southampton with Wijnaldum and Oxlade-Chamberlain a couple of weeks ago. Admittedly, I think that one was after the Super Cup, wasn't it? So you can understand the rotation there. And I was also looking at Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain thinking, it's a good game for him. You see where he's at, but I think it shows a lot of respect for Burnley and what they're about that he didn't change that lineup. And also, I think maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain being called up to England might have changed his thinking slightly.
To be honest, I just think he's picked what he thinks his best team is at the minute. And I don't think Klopp really plans game after game. I think he just gets in and goes, here's what I've got, here's how I'm going to use it. I don't think he'll ever see him rest players in away games. I think if he's going to rest players, you might see someone on the bench, you know, when we play, say, I don't know, someone comes to Anfield, who's bottom of the league at the minute, say, I don't know, Watford the rubbish at the minute, but say they come to Anfield, you might see Origi get a start over Firmino. But I don't think he'll rest players in away games. I think he'll see what he's got and pick his best team for that game. And that was the best team for that game. I was quite happy with it. I think if Chamberlain was 100% at it, mm-hmm. I've got a feeling he'd be in the team. But obviously, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that he'll be 100% at it straight away. So, and that's a hard game for you not to be 100% at. So I think that was, in terms of talent, I don't think it's our best team. But in terms of current form, there's no one there who think he doesn't deserve to be in this team, or you've got to bomb him out, or there's someone on the bench who's really pushing them. I think it's only, I mean, like I say, you can throw Milner in any time, any place, and he'll be fine. He'll do James Milner stuff. Chamberlain's ceiling is probably higher than Henderson and Wijnaldum as the attacking option in midfield, but I think he's just gone like that. That's my best team. This is a hard game. And it is a hard game. And we made it look easy, which is just credit to how good Liverpool are at the moment. But I don't think that's a game where you mess about. I think you see what you've got and you go, right, that's our team. That's what we're going to win with. And listen, he was more than justified, wasn't he?
You mentioned two words that struck a chord with me there, the talent and form. And I think as soon as you said that, I'm thinking to myself, that's Gomez and Matip.
Yeah,
and I think that's the big question at the moment. Where does Joe Gomez get back into this side, and how does he get back into this side? Is it a case of he's going to spell Trent Alexander-Arnold, or is Matip just fighting tooth and nail for that spot, and he'll keep him out if he keeps playing at this level?
Matip deserves to play, doesn't he? That it's as simple as that. It's the reason. It's how Gomez got in the team in the first place. He come in when some other people maybe weren't at it or available, and he kept his place, and that's what's happened here. There's no way in a million years you drop John Matip now. You just don't do it. And listen, Gomez has played well. He started the season, didn't he? He started the Norwich game and stuff. He played right back at times as well. At the minute, I wouldn't change anything. And especially if the games are going to be one a week. When we get to Champions League fixtures, I reckon he will start rotating those two. I don't think he trusts Matip to play three games a week, for example. He picks Van Dijk all the time. And I think he will rotate he'll rotate Matip, Gomez and Trent. Two of those three he'll play in every game. And that's fine. I think there's no reason to alter it. At the minute, if my life depends on a game Liverpool winning it tomorrow, then Joel Matip would be our centre-back for me. And I'm a big Gomez fan. I thought he was going to play against Arsenal, you know, because of his pace and stuff. But Matip and Van Dijk have got this understanding. You know, it's a partnership that won a European Cup. It went on a massive unbeaten run at the end of last season. It's continued into this season. There's absolutely no reason to change it. And like you say, your best team isn't always your 11 most talented players. That, you know, if it was the case, then Keita would play every week probably, or Chamberlain would play every single week. Gomez would definitely play a centre half, but that is how footy works, is it? You pick the best balance and stuff, and I don't know what it is that makes Matip and Van Dijk work well, but why would you disrupt it now? It makes no sense. And to be fair, when Gomez played earlier in the season, you know, Liverpool they conceded quite a few chances. Especially Norwich, I thought it didn't look right again early season and stuff. So
we've not played together for quite a long time.
There's tons of reasons why. I think if you said to Klopp who's the best centre back you've got after Van Dijk, I think he would hand on heart say Joe Gomez. But then he's got to look at Joe Matip in the face and say, I'm dropping you. And can you imagine the message that sends to your dressing room? You know, look how good this lad's been, and I'm I preach, if you're good in training, you're good in matches, I'll give you your shirt. And this lad's been brilliant. Oh, by the way, he's dropped. I don't think you can do it. I think when you start to rotate, it makes it easier, doesn't it, when there's more games? But right now, I don't think you can do it.
Where do you stand on this one, John? It's been a while since we've spoken about... Well, I don't know if we have spoken about the Gomez Matip thing, actually.
No, I'm all for it. I think the reason it works, I think, I'm not knocking Gomez's footballing ability here, is I think that Matip's, you know, he's played centre mid and he's comfortable on the ball, and we're seeing the benefits of that with Trent, you know, the way he can play passes and stuff. I think when we split the centre halves a lot and you've got a goalie coming out, you know, as like an 11th outfield player, they're both comfortable on the ball. And like I say, I'm not saying Gomez isn't comfortable, but I think Gomez is good on the ball. But as Steve says, you know, you see a lot of his recovery. You know, it's that pace that helps him recover things a lot, which I think is why he struggles sometimes at fullback, because he's got to use that more. But you know, he plays the pass into Firmino for the third goal. You know, and it's a straight pass, and that's, I think, we're at our best when we're being vertical as a team. You know, I'm very compact, and that's what the manager wants, and that's actually what he facilitates. And if he has that thing within a Matip, which I know we all kind of take the piss out of him for a little bit, but you know, if he can't do that, he'll go into midfield with the ball at his feet and dribble a bit. And then either way, we're still getting up the pitch, and it's about attacking. So you get a good balance from him, I think. And like I say, you know, Gomez is a great defender, but he's got different attributes. He's, you know, he's much more of a ball playing centre half than he is, I think, comfortable being in midfield and having to do things with stuff around him. You know what I mean? So the manager's got options there, and I think, you know, if you look at someone as well like Fabinho, we were having a bit of a chat about him before we started, I think he has similar attributes as well, in that he seems comfortable on the ball in midfield, but I could just as easily see him in centre half if the manager wants that. So there's options for him, you know what I mean? It's not as if, you know, there's no reason why we have to pick one or the other. You know, we can have the best of both worlds, as he said. You know, the manager's already said, hasn't he, in his press conferences and stuff, that he's going to start rotating more when we have more games. So why, if it's working for now, why try and make it complicated? You know, I mean, I just think that's the partnership that won us the European Cup, so stick with what works.
James, just sticking on this topic slightly for a minute or two. When you think about playing Burnley, and you think about Joel Matip and you think about Joe Gomez, before the game, who would you have said matched up better with Woods and Barnes, Matip or Gomez?
Truthfully, Matip. And even though he might not have that physical stature that Gomez might, like, you know, present, because Gomez, he's a big guy, you know what I mean? He's a tank, he's built like a fucking huge fella, and he can just push people off the ball and head the ball away. But I think Matip just, I don't know, just the amount he's convinced me over the past few months, since like last December or whatever, he's just been amazing. And I'd want him in my team against anyone, whether that's Burnley or if it's Barcelona, I want to see Matip in there. Because you said it before, him and Van Dijk just have something. They have this like connection with each other, and it just works. And you don't fix what isn't broken at the end of the day. If it's working and it's doing well for you, and they're playing like the best pair in the world at the moment, then I don't really see a point in changing it.
I must admit, like, if I think back to 18 months ago, I would say this wasn't a game for Joel Matip.
No, I agree.
And I always used to say, the word I used to use, I think you used to use it as well quite often when the scrammer is passive.
Yeah, and soft.
Yeah, and you know, you think like Woods and Barnes and those type of psychers would be able to get into him, but he's just changed completely. I don't know whether it's playing with Virgil van Dijk and having that little bit of confidence, or he's just in better form himself. Maybe he's playing free from pain and free from injuries for a long time now, and he's just got to the level that he's always been able to achieve. But for me now, he knows when to attack the ball. He can be aggressive when he wants to be. He knows when to stand off. You mentioned that ball into Firmino. He wins the second ball there. You know, I'm doing this one on the Goals Explained. It'll be out later on the YouTube. And you see him, his position's perfect. His position's perfect because I think it's Wood, is it, that plays the ball down to Rodriguez. Now, Matip's there and he's looking at, if Rodriguez picks the ball up, I'm in a good position. And if he misses the ball, he steps out onto it. It's absolutely fantastic defending. And then he's got the ability to hit the ball as well. I just think he's been absolutely superb, Joel Matip. Another player I wanted to talk about is Adrian. Now, you know, in the ground, Steve, you know, we saw that great save. Admittedly, it was early on and it was the other end of the pitch. Kicking wise, he's not there, but he's our backup goalkeeper, so I understand it. But he makes a double save when they're offside. He makes a great save from Rodriguez late on in the game where he's sort of down, palming at his feet. He's a great shot stopper, isn't he? And yeah, he seems to have really got into this side and enjoying himself.
Yeah, he can't kick.
No,
he can't kick at all. He can't get to the halfway line. That's a big worry for us. But that's why they don't give me. They try as much as they can not to give me, and that's fine. Every time, you know, if they have to give it to him, they give it to him in a position where he can then play the pass to do the centre half. It doesn't look like they want to give it to him to ping the, you know, the diagonals out to the wingers or to the fullbacks, and that's fine. You play with what you've got and you play to your limitations. It's amazing actually how far he can kick it. It's actually just about the day, but he's a backup goalie. You've got to adapt.
If this was Sunday League, would he be taking his own goal kicks?
Honestly, absolutely not. I think and that's fine. You know, he is who he is. He's there's a reason why he was, you know, training in Spain with no one signing for him. He's good, but he's never going to be a first choice, is he, for anyone at the moment? I think down the bottom of the league, teams would probably have him because, again, he is a really good shot stopper. I thought the one at Rodriguez's FIFA example is really good. Just play. That's fine. Take the pressure off him. Don't kick it back to him. If he can't kick it, don't give it, kick it to him. It's like asking, you know, you're not going to lump 50 balls in the air towards Mo Salah because he's probably going to not win every headers. So you play to the strengths of your team. I like his character. If nothing else, he's a little bit bananas, and I think that's good. I've got no worries. I was never panicking about him. You know what I mean? Even under the high.
Do you think he's better than Mignolet?
Yes. I don't know. It's a good question. I think he's a better character, and I think that helps. I think you've got, again, I think you need to, I don't think Liverpool can, you can be a shrinking violet at Liverpool's goalie. I think of all the positions that we're critical about, I think we're really harsh on goalies. As fans on things like this, in the grounds, you know, every time the ball went near Carrius or Mignolet, we were harsh on them. Rightly or wrongly, I think it was just a natural reaction.
Whether he's better or not, I think he's better for our fan base than Mignolet.
Yeah, and I think he's better in that he's more front foot. And I think Mignolet was on his line too much and he was too deep, and that killed us. Adrian will come on, you know, he will come and sweep up, and he'll do it pretty well again. Again, I mentioned the Arsenal game when he comes out and he clears and it goes to their lad. I think that's just a little bit hard lines. I think he was right to come and sweep it out. Just that was cleared and again, because he can't kick. I liked that he didn't look phased when the ball was in the air as well. You know, he was happy to come and claim stuff or come and get it. That's the thing that separates him from Mignolet. Mignolet's probably technically a better shot stopper, but I feel more confident with Adrian in goal, I must admit, than I would with Mignolet. I think it's credit to him, actually. I think because it's dead hard being Liverpool's goalie. Alisson walked in, he's the first one who's made it look easy for what, 10 years since Pepe, peak Pepe Reina around 2007. Ever since then, it's been hard graft, hasn't it? And Alisson just waltzed in magnificently and just did it all brilliantly. And to be fair, Adrian's done all right, hasn't he? He hasn't done anything.
Just the Ings one for Southampton.
Yeah, and that's a shocker. And that's one of those where that's so bad, you can almost write it off. It isn't like, for example...
It's like we wrote off the Alisson one against Leicester.
Yeah, similar. Like, I watched Lossell playing for Arsenal against Spurs yesterday as I was watching the North London derby, and he makes a couple of parries, and he does it a couple of times, and that would be more of a worry than the Ings thing for me. Because the Ings thing, you can just stop. You know, you just don't be a dickhead. If your natural reaction is to parry it and it doesn't go far, that's never going to change. And Mignolet had that issue at times as well. I've not seen anything fundamentally in his shot stopping that makes me really, you know, nervous about him. I just don't think, again, don't, you can't kick it, don't let him kick it. And that's, you're laughing.
Okay, let's get on to the first goal and then we'll have a little chat about Salah and stuff after it. And we've got to obviously come on to the Mane stuff. James, the first goal, is it Trent's?
Yeah, you're mad. What do you mean? Is it Trent? Of course, it's Trent.
It's absolutely not Trent.
Well, it is because he shot it. It looks on tap.
No,
probably not. But listen, it went towards goal. It ends up going in the top left bins. Doesn't matter if it went off their player. It's his goal.
Okay,
you're on it.
Poll in the YouTube video. Can we put a poll in there? Who agrees with James? It's Trent's goal.
I hope everyone doesn't fucking agree because that was his goal. That was his fucking goal. Listen,
right, you got 30 seconds to case your arguments.
Pretty much, it was his
down the lens, lad.
Long story short, it was his goal. He was the one who put it in the net, even though it went off a player. I don't really have an argument. It was his goal. It was blatant. Do you know what I mean? It was obvious. But he's just boss, isn't he?
Well, you've convinced me that it's not his goal. Hey, <I'm John. laughs> Was it his goal?
I'd say so, yeah.
Really?
He's right. My guy.
See? Okay, you've got 30 seconds to answer argument, lads.
I just think, ultimately, all right, yeah, you know, he's definitely put it in, hung it up as a cross back stick. That's what he's tried to do. But the point is it's gone in. And like, if for me, it's like, it's the intent of it. It's like, he's trying to put it into the goal. Not as in taking a shot, but as in he's trying to hang it up for someone to nod it in. So
okay,
like,
well, wait. Matip plays a ball to Firmino and we end up scoring off it. The intent is that he's moving the ball forward to try and get a goal. If that takes a deflection off somebody somehow from the halfway line and goes in, is it Matip's goal?
No, but that's a different
thing. That's exactly what you're saying.
Like, I've seen much bigger deflections than that. Like, I've seen, and it's been counted as a goal for the player who took the shot or the cross or whatever. That's a goal.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah.
Goal?
No. Absolutely not. I think the definition.
What did Sen say after the game?
He went arsed. He said bothered, which is, you know, he played the professional card.
He clearly doesn't have a competition with Robertson for most goals this
and
season.
It'll count as an assist anyway, won't it? So he'll be laughing. And I think he basically said, you know, as long as the team wins and all that. I think the rule is it's got to be on target. It can be if you shoot on target and it deflects anyway and goes in, it's your goal. That's going back stick for someone to try and nod in. So no, I don't think it is goal. What I would say, I thought we used that tactic well. The early cross, and I thought they explained it well. I think on the obviously you've got the ground, you wouldn't see it. Sky post match, and they were saying Trent. I think it was Trent's interview. He said actually they worked on it all week, and that if you let Burnley get set for so if you work it slowly, 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 and then cross it, their centre half's led it away, and their fullbacks are massive. They'll lead everything away, but if you can catch them coming out or going back with the ball, and you can whip it in first time, you're more likely to get something out of it. And Trent done it a few times, and Henderson always does it in every game anyway, and he done it a few times. And I think that's the benefit of having the week off. I always felt like every time we played Burnley, it'd be on the back of a Champions League game or a few injuries, or it'd be a cup game in the middle.
Well, it was the flip reverse this time. They had a game midweek,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah.
Whereas we didn't. We had a full
and
week.
I think, and you know, even again, Van Dijk's post-match, he has it into you on Sky, and he says, but we practiced this all week. We stuck Divock Origi in training on me, and we just lumped balls at him. And me, you know, him, and we just used him as like.
We just used him as like
the Chris Wood, Ashley Barnes nuisance factor, you know, almost like a pracky for it. And I think you could tell that Liverpool done their own work on that game. That's what it looked like. It didn't look like Liverpool playing Liverpool footy all the time. It looked like Liverpool playing footy to beat Burnley, and that cross was just one example. To be fair, if I was a Burnley fan, I'd be absolutely raging at Wood for turning this back. I think that's unacceptable. To be honest, I don't think any footy player in the world, you can kind of accept it if it's like a, you know, if it rolls out to the edge of the box and Oxlade-Chamberlain's blamming one from 40 yards and you think, Christ, don't want that hit me in the face. But a curl and cross from Trent, I think you'd want your big brave striker to not turn his back on it. The goalie should do better, I think, as well. I think his footwork's non-existent. He's very static. So it's a slice of luck, but I think it's one that we probably earned just because, again, we were doing something to exploit Burnley's weaknesses and obviously work, because they've got a goalie who stays on his line. They don't really press crosses very well. They want you to cross it. They're made up if you cross it, because they will just head it away all day. What they don't want is the one-twos on the edge of the box and the fast intricate stuff. They've got no desire to play that. So we've worked on something to counteract them, and listen, it's a slice of luck. To be honest, if it doesn't hit the lad, I think we're probably going to score. I think, is it Mane at the back post? It is Mane, isn't it?
Timo Salah. Yeah.
And I think he's going to score. So it's a little bit of luck. I don't think it's 10th goal, but I always felt, and you'll probably agree, watching Man United's 90s, 2000s, you always felt they were jammy. But I think good teams get the luck, don't they? I mean, they'd get that goal where it'd fall and ricochet to six lads and you get one in, or they score an Oggy or something. And I think we're starting to get in. I think good teams tend to get the rub of the green a bit.
Yeah. No, I think Steve's right. I think, you know, whether you think it's Trent's goal or you don't think it's Trent's goal, ultimately, it's him doing what he did is, yeah, what influenced them, made it happen. I mean, the ball from Henderson's not great. I actually thought like we could do something here, and then the ball from Henderson's actually a pretty poor pass. He still does that, and as he says, you know, the fact that he's able to put that ball in, regardless of whether it is him going through or not and ended up going into the net, it still would have gone into a dangerous area, and, you know, in some way either, you know, maybe either gone in off somebody else or, you know, fell for a second ball or something else would have happened. It's clearly something we worked on, but it's his influence. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if it's a matter of doing that or somebody else, that ball doesn't get put into that area and it's not a dangerous situation.
Yeah,
he's
a brilliant crosser.
He's absolutely, and I think that's where, I don't know if you've seen, I think obviously everyone's seen this guy interview with Klopp afterwards where his face drops. But I think that's why he was probably so disappointed that he didn't get given it, not necessarily because of the deflection, but more because it come from something he did that was really good, and that's what he brings to the team. Yeah. And, you know, Steve's right when he says, you know, like, that's not something you'd associate classically with Burnley, you know what I mean? I don't think they're used to, or whether teams do or don't do it, I don't know, but I don't think they're used to teams doing that to them, because, you know, you look at, you know, they are big lads, you know, and you know, quite rough and ready, but you're not expecting people to suddenly start going, like, well, we're just going to throw loads of crosses into your box because, you know, because they'd set them away. So fair play to him. I think, like I say, he deserves, we were clearly in the ascendancy as a team anyway, but he deserves, I think, the credit at least for doing it. You know what I mean?
Okay. We got a comment on last week's Final Word show that said something along the lines of they weren't very happy with me talking about Premier League football and harking it back to my days in 5-a-side or 11-a-side. So I'm not going to do that this week.
Oh, I've got a really good
I actually though. Am. Yeah. So I once crossed the ball in 11-a-side, and I'm really sorry, but you caused me to do this, and this doesn't really affect the game, and this really isn't about the game. I'm just telling you a story about when I played 11-a-side when I was 10 years old, which was 26 years ago, by the way. So this is going to really piss you off, but maybe you won't type the message next time. And I don't carry things, just water off a duck's back. I once crossed the ball when I was 10 years old, and if anyone who played in the Rudston Villa side under 11s, where we came second in the league to Genoa, then you'll know this. I said I shot, but I really crossed, and it went in the top bin. There you go, I finally got it off my chest. It's got nothing to do with the game, Confession. But I just wanted to piss you off a little bit, to be honest with you, so here we go.
It's just a therapy session.
There'll be no one who watches this game from Rudston Villa under 11s. They've disowned me for my terrible performances at right wing back in the day when I was right footed. Changed when I was about 13 to left footed. You probably don't care, but you know, again, it's just something I wanted
Listen,
to tell
mate,
everyone.
It's your show, you do what you want.
I thought so too. Thank you very much. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Salah now, and hopefully this will bleed into the Mane conversation as well. Salah, he strikes the post early on in the game, doesn't
he? It's
a
great
fingertips, maybe, yeah. I only watched it once back, I think, you know, at a service station on the way home. He gets that one where it bounces off him after a great little through ball by Hendo, where he picks the ball up deep as well. He's trying to score goals a lot. And then Mane comes off when he's substituted, and he is absolutely raging at Mo Salah for not playing him through. Do you like this?
Yeah, so I've got no issue with it, to be honest. I'd be raging as well. He should have passed it. He had two. The one, actually the worst one, was the one where he should have played Firmino in. That's probably an even more, I don't know, selfish act of it. I think
Mark did it to me in 5-a-side like 3 months ago. Circle and he never played the ball. I'm still raging about it now.
You know what? I've got no issue. I don't know if you really want to do it on the side of the pitch where the cameras can see. I think you might want to get in the dressing room and do it. But listen, everyone's got emotions, and sometimes it's hard to stop it, isn't it? Going back again to 5-a-side, me and you have nearly killed each other on a 5-a-side pitch. Generally, I thought you were going to fight with me. And like, we're mates, and they're mates, and that can happen sometimes, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's one of them. I thought you were going to knock me out in goals or something. Like, me and you were going to be scrapping on the big pitch, all speak. I think Salah is right. I think Mane's right to have a go at Salah, and I would hope that the managers had a go at Salah as well for those ones. I've got no issue with Salah taking certain shots on. If he wants to shoot from the edge of the box, we know he can score, and that's fine. But when your mate, if you can play a pass where your mate's got an open goal or an open shot with just him and the goalie, and he had that twice, I think he has to pass it. I do wonder if it's 0-0 if he does pass it. Mm-hmm. I think with the scoreline being what it is, I think he's trying to boost his own goal tally. Whatever anyone says, Mo Salah, he comes across the most humble man in the world, but he also comes across like he's got a massive ego. I think he loves being Mo Salah, and I think he loves being Mo Salah goal scorer. And that's fine, because he scored, what, 50-odd Premier League goals in two seasons, a little bit. So don't take that away from him. But again, I've got no issue with Mane having a go. And I'd expect the opposite. If that was the other way around, I'd expect Salah to have a go at Mane as well, because he has to pass that ball. I think
this can work out well for us, though, can't it, James? Because, you know, Mane doesn't say anything, then the next time it might be 0-0 and the ball's not played across. But because he's made an absolute meal out of it, you know Mo Salah is going to be passing to Sadio Mane in the next game. And I'd put a bet on Salah assist at Mane next game. I genuinely would, because Mane is forcing the situation. It might not be now. He's off the pitch anyway, but he's forcing it for the next time. Yeah.
Nah, Mane might come across as this nice lad on social media, you know, does all these charities, does all these things for him back home. But listen, Mane is a moody bastard. Trust. Like, see the way he had to go at Mo Salah? He was like, you're not going to let me get that goal, nah. I see how it is. And then he was fuming after it as well. He was absolutely horrified, and rightly so. Listen, that's the competitiveness that these players possess. That world class, you look at Ronaldo and you see all the times that he fumes when he doesn't get the ball to feet. Not that he can fucking talk because he doesn't pass the ball himself. But when he does, when he doesn't get the pass, he's just like, what, lad? Like, I could have scored then. I had a better chance than you did, and you didn't pass the ball to me. I'm a better striker than you are. That's not what Mane will be saying, but it's just along those lines. Like you said, that's a great point. You've got to think about situations where you might need a goal. You might absolutely have to get a goal. And Salah's just going to be greedy and go for it himself. That's a detrimental moment in the game.
I think it's worth saying, though, Salah does assist a lot.
He assists more than Mane.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's a Mo Salah's overly greedy problem. I think it was a Mo Salah had two issues in that game where he should have passed it. He took the wrong option.
Yeah.
And I've seen Mane do it. I'll never forgive Mane for that Goodison derby when we drew 1-1 for as long as I live, because he should have passed it. You know, it's 1-0 and he should pass it to Salah. We win 2-0 and it's all done. So it swings around about. I don't mind them having a go at each other. I think, in fact, I don't know how often it comes across when you're on telly, but if you sit low down sometimes where you used to sit, Chris, or whatever, you hear them having a go at each other all the time. I've heard Andy Robertson, like, effing and blind, and I've heard Virgil van Dijk. I'd be terrified to talk to Virgil van Dijk, even now. And Robertson's, I've seen, like, where's my effing cover, Virgil, or something like that. I've seen Henderson is constantly having a go with people. Don't mind it, as long as you do it in the right way, and you accept that if you cock up, you're going to get it as well. It's just competitive winning football, isn't it? You know, there's nothing wrong with having a go at your mates, and there's nothing wrong with celebrating with your mates as well. I think Liverpool have got the balance just about right. You don't want to be moody where you're all hate each other, but don't think you can always be, oh, never mind, Mo, pass it to me next time. No, absolutely have a go at him. I don't care if he's the best player in the world or he's, you know, the young 16-year-old kid coming into the team. If he makes the wrong decision, I think it's right to have a go at him, and I think, again, I'm not sure Mane should have done it on the sideline. He knows he's not stupid. There's cameras everywhere. In hindsight, you probably want, again, you want to get into the dressing room and have a go.
That's one of them where the moments.
Exactly.
And
emotions.
Exactly. To see that, don't you? There's nothing you can do. We've all been there at five a size, haven't we? Where we've seen it. John, where do you sit on it? You happy?
Yeah, I think it's great. It's, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, there's two reactions to this. There's the media reaction to it, which is, oh, something's not right at Liverpool, which is just bollocks. You know what I mean? Let's fuck that off straight away. But there's the reaction to it as well as fans, where you look at that and think, well, that's what I want to see from players. You know what I mean? Like, we're 3-0, you know, we're nearly 3-0 up, I think, at the time. And, you know, you've got, like, he wants that because he wants to score an open goal. He doesn't want it to be 3-0, he wants it to be 4, he wants it to be 5. That's what you want. You know, and there's a really good piece Honigstein did, I think, with The Athletic recently, where it was Ronaldo talking about, you know, his relationship with the manager and the fact that the manager gives him constant shit, basically. He said, but then when you're off the pitch, he's brilliant, you know, and he said, like, I wouldn't change it because I want him to be like that, to be on me, so I'm doing what's best for the team. And ultimately, Mane's frustration is that. I think, you know, as much as, like, yeah, he has definitely got, I think, a bit of an ego because you see how he is sometimes on the pitch, but, like, ultimately, he wants us to be the best team. And I think, you know, you've seen, like, almost like the blooming of him as, like, a complete forward, I think, in the last 12 months, where he's not just a winger now, is he? He's a 10, he's a striker, he can do a bit of everything, really. And I think he wants to be more involved. And, you know, on the other side of it, the Salah side of it, like, you know, whether he intends to do it to set him up or not, he ultimately passes to...
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Firmino for the third goal, you know what I mean, and sets that up. So as you say, you can't really lay the blame, I think, on anyone's feet. I think it's just one of them situations, like Steve says, where he made the wrong decision in that moment, but ultimately it's not like a systemic issue in how he plays football, is it? You know what I mean? Like, we're still, you know, there's a reason we finished with 97 points last year. There's a reason we won the European Cup. There's a reason we're currently top of the league. There's a reason we just beat Burnley 3-0, and, you know, both of them played a massive part in it, so.
I must admit, like, you know, if I was in that situation as well, if I was Mane, the next game, I am absolutely laying one on for Salah before Salah gets a chance to lay one on for me, because I'll be there, like, Salah will be running off celebrating, I'll be standing there going, here you go. That's how that incorporated celebration into it. You've got it all. You've got it absolutely nailed. So let's talk about Mane's goal. Sorry, I'll start with you, James. It's really un-Burnley like that one, isn't it? Because Ben May, their captain,
yeah,
he just gives the ball to Firmino, and then from there it's pretty easy for us, isn't it?
Yeah, it's what happens when you give the ball to any of our front three, of that matter. You know, even probably the midfield as well. We're just very dangerous when we do get the ball in and around the area, and if you give the ball to us, you're basically asking to concede. And that's not in a cocky way, to be fair. Like, I'm not even saying that to be like, oh, we'll score every time we give it to them. But it's the same with Man City. If you give them the ball in a dangerous area, that 9 times out of 10 they're going to score, and it's because they've got both teams have got world class forwards.
Were you surprised at the ease with which Mane finishes that? Because that, again, I think 18 months ago Mane doesn't finish like that for me.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of players who were in that boat. Like, yeah, we mentioned about Matip before, how he's got better in the last 18 months. And then with Mane as well, I have seen a difference in his finishing, because that was one of the biggest problems I had with him 18 months ago. Felt like he had pretty much near enough everything, except that just clinical edge, that, you know, when it comes to his finishing. Now it looks like he's got that, because he's actually scoring some top goals. And you think, ooh, he could not score, he had Burnt in the net.
It's the confidence that he's playing with as well, yeah, isn't it, to take that first time, Steve?
Yeah, it was a goal. I knew it was a goal the second we got the ball. And yeah, it's mad watching that. It's like watching like an athletics runner running the 800 metres and he's like 100 metres to go with the line. You know he's won, but you're not going to celebrate until it's scored. It was like that with the goal. The second Firmino got that ball, I thought we were going to score. I didn't know if it was going to be Mane or Salah, because I didn't know which way he was going to pass it. But it was obviously a goal. It was a goal all day. It had to be something bizarre. And that, I spoke before about Liverpool doing things a little bit un-Liverpool-like in that game. That was very much Liverpool-like. And I'll be surprised if Liverpool worked on that much in training. You know, we talk about preparing for Burnley. The last thing I think Liverpool would have expected was for Burnley centre-halves to be passing it to each other. Because they never did it all game. Every time they got it, it was direct to Barnes, direct to Wood. Get it out wide to, it was Lennon and McNeil, is it? I think that was their plan all game. They don't do that. Because they're not that good at it. It doesn't play to their strengths, and also, you know, Liverpool are amazing at getting the ball off them. But that was just Liverpool being Liverpool. That was Firmino being Firmino, and it was Mane being Mane, and it was actually quite easy, wasn't it? If you'd have said to me, how are Liverpool going to score in this game, I wouldn't have ever imagined them scoring that goal. You'd imagine them scoring that goal against a lot of teams. Or even you can even go to Leicester and score that goal, or Bournemouth and score that goal, where just one little error and you're in. I would never expect a Burnley to do it, and I don't think they intended to do it. I think the lad, he's just trying to play a simple pass, and his balance is wrong, and he underhits it. And to be honest, I think they should foul us. There's a couple of times where they should have booed Firmino in the air. I'm
getting all close to him.
Yeah, so I think, is it Westwood, I think, is chasing him back, and I think he probably could just volley him. And that's what I would want. That's what I'd expect Burnley to do, to be honest, as well. But it's one of them, isn't it? I think we've just capitalised. And if you, again, we're that team where if you give us an inch, we'll take a mile. You give us a sniff and we'll score. Like, it's like blood in the water, isn't it? And that was a goal. The second Firmino got that, I was up and I was thinking, right, goal here. I don't know if it was the same in the ground. I don't know if you knew.
Yeah.
This is a goal. I don't know who's going to score it, but we're going to score. And it's just deadly. It's just absolutely deadly.
The thing that interested me, and I think it's a really nice talking point, actually, John, is how Burnley played after that second goal, because I was stood in the ground thinking to myself, they're going to have to push on here. And they just continued with plan A.
Mm.
And I'm thinking to myself, they're not trying to win this game of footy, are they? And that tells you quite a lot about Liverpool, doesn't it? And that they're not interested in even attempting to get back into it, because we've used this a lot today. 18 months, 2 years ago, Liverpool are 2-0 off. Not a bad situation for the team to be in.
Yeah.
Now teams aren't even trying to score against us.
No, they're not. And I said the same thing watching the game. I said, oh, they're going to have to come out and play us now. And this is where it might become a cricket score. This is where we might suddenly get into the game and start scoring threes, fours, fives. But they just stuck to it. And, you know, it was an unusual thing, I think, to watch as a Burnley team, because I fully expected them to give us a much harder time in midfield. And, you know, they were putting the stats up at the end of the game, you know, like how few touches like Lennon, Wood and Barnes had in the game. The midfield weren't getting the ball to them at all. Like our midfield were absolutely just all over them, which I think was great. And, you know, whether Dyche, you know, I like Dyche, I respect everything he's done at Burnley, but, like, he moans like fuck. And, like, he actually come out after the match and was fairly just, you know, placid and straightforward. He's just like, you know, fair play, they're a world-class team, you know, there's a reason they're the European champions, blah, 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 blah. On our day, let's move on. And he just took it. And maybe that is just one of them. And, you know, that's good. I think that bodes well for us, because loads of teams in this league do that for City. Loads of teams just go, this, you know, forget this. Let's just make sure we don't concede loads. And, you know, 3-0, all right, it's, you know, it looks, you could maybe argue it's a bit of a pasting, but it doesn't read that way when you see it. Does it? But certainly if you watch the game, we were the better team. But
they did come out eventually, and we scored the third goal as soon as it happened.
Yeah,
they had four. By the time Matip plays the ball to Firmino, they've got four midfielders and two attackers behind Firmino. And that's the first time I noticed them coming out, and we just scored. And you're like, and that's why you do plan A and you stick with it. Because as soon as you come out against this Liverpool side, we're on you like that.
We were in between the lines, properly in between the lines, weren't we? And we were able to break. And I'm kind of agreeing with what John says there, is that they had no intention of trying to win that game anymore, like you said. And yet, that isn't in their nature. They're a never give up team. Sean Dyche, like you mentioned before, he'll find anything to complain about. He'll do anything. They'll just start lumping it. I think what happened was, usually, again, you mentioned Liverpool 18 months ago, teams would just lump it and play for second balls, and you might feed off the scraps. And that's what Burnley do really well. I think they're a more attacking team than people give them credit for. They just do it rather unconventionally. But it's hard to win second balls when our colossus Dutch centre-half just ending every single thing away.
He's just he like a fucking magnet to the ball,
was,
isn't he?
Every cross, every corner, every long ball, he was just heading every single...
Wasn't there, where there was a free kick and they took it dead quick. The lad put the ball down, someone else took it.
And he's in.
And Virgil van Dijk's the only man who's got the ball, and he's like, don't be trying to take it quick against me, lad. You're fucking idiot.
There was a few times you had to turn the afterburners on to get him behind and catch the lads up. He was, again, I thought he was outstanding. I think Rodriguez gets him a little bit tangled at the very, very end, but other than that, it's hard to win second balls when you know. How often will Chris Wood be going for aerial duels and not be the favourite to win it?
Yeah.
I mean, it must be very few and far between. I never once thought Van Dijk was going to miss anything. He was absolutely unreal. And I think Dyche mentions him in his post-match conference, press conference. He must be so demoralising. When your plan is mix it up, get physical, we'll bully these, and then you look at this fella there and you think, oh, am I bullying him? It's impossible. He didn't give them an inch. He headed
mentally is the only way, because you're not going to bully him physically, are you?
No. And that's the difference, is that even against Liverpool in the past, they will just continue lumping it, hope for again. Can Chris Wood beat Matip or Gomez or Lovren or Clavan? Can he beat them once in the year? Can he beat them twice? And the odds are, yeah, he will. If you hit 10 balls off Virgil van Dijk against Chris Wood, I think Van Dijk will win 10 of them. And that's just the difference between having good defenders and having the best defender on the planet and the best footballer on the planet who's just been voted there. It completely ruins their game plan. And then they try and switch and they try and go for Matip, don't they, a little bit as well. And Matip's the same. He just won everything. He was, like you mentioned before, on the front foot. And I think when Burnley realised that, you mentioned before about plan A's and plan B's, they haven't got a plan B, Burnley, because plan A often is what got them here. I think they just realised, this isn't for us. Let's save our legs. Let's just not get an absolute hiding and we'll... you know, we'll come back next week and we'll, or after the international break, and we'll try and beat whoever we play.
I just want to touch on one thing, actually. I think kind of feeds into this third goal and then also the front three stuff. I thought Firmino was brilliant in this game. I think, sort of said before, about the thing with the midfield with Burnley, thinking that they'd probably win the midfield battle, maybe, you know, 4v3. But I think, you know, we touch on them being, Salah and Mane being brilliant as wingers and wide forwards. He was absolutely phenomenal as a false nine. You know, he always given us the extra man in midfield, along, you know, along with Fabinho and maybe Matip stepping up as well. But, you know, you look at that third goal and see, you know, like, he gets the ball and they've instantly, Salah and Mane have instantly got two lads around them, and to be able to turn and, you know, just keep it simple, but play the pass to them, find the man, and then obviously sprint half the pitch, get up and finish it and make it look like you just side-footing into the goal is phenomenal. And he's a player who, you know, when we say, like, Burnley are quite a physical team and like to play rough and ready, he has no problem with that. He's just like, I don't care, that sound. I can do that, and then I can also go up and play up front.
But he doesn't get demoralised, because he, you know, for me, I thought he was outstanding, but there were so many 50-50 balls in the air, certainly first half, and he just continues to go at them. And I think back to when Sturridge was there and he half-assed them. Firmino goes in 100% every time, and if he loses 6 of 10, he continues. It doesn't matter to him. He's going to make it difficult for you. And what Liverpool did so well in that game, and Klopp does mention this in one of his post-match interviews, I'm not sure where it was for, maybe it was Match of the Day, he talks about winning the second balls, and Steve mentioned the second balls already a few times. And James, that's what Liverpool did so well, because you mentioned it, Steve. We were there, we'd planned on how to attack them. We'd obviously planned on how to defend against them as well. And Klopp said, this is the best performance we've had against Burnley, because we won every single second ball.
Yeah, and listen, we've got a game plan going into every game. We've got that good of a manager and that good of a set of players to listen to the manager, that we can go in with game plans. Teams can't really have a game plan against Liverpool, because we just seem to know straight away how to go against that. So say if we have a poor first half, let's say, once Jurgen Klopp has a word with those players at half-time, it's a different story in the second
Arsenal's
half.
Arsenal's a perfect example of that. We're whipping balls in for fun, and then all of a sudden we're playing balls into feet.
Chelsea in the Super Cup as well, we had a very, very sloppy first half in that game, and then the second half, it was like we just came out a different, you know, sort of a different team. And Man City in the Charity Shield as well, that was another example of it. There's so many games that I could come up with an example of that, but the overall thing about it all is we've just got a world-class manager, and he just knows how to instill it into our world-class players.
Now, one of the things that I find interesting, it's the two different styles, and we're kind of wrapping up this game now anyway. But before we start talking about the teams around the league, Steve, is Man City, I find a really interesting subject when you compare them with Liverpool, because Man City play their way, and they impose their will on teams game after game after game after game. Whereas Liverpool are a little bit more like a chameleon. Liverpool, teams come at Liverpool in different ways, and we just deal with it and shrug it off. Burnley is very different to how you're going to play against Southampton, very different to how you're going to play against Arsenal. And we sort of do just slightly tweak things and get the better of teams. So do you find that as interesting as me, is that there's two ways almost of how we're going around trying to beat teams?
Yeah, ultimately I think it's, you know, the reason will be, I think City have probably got a bit a better midfield, or create more creativity in that. They know that they can play their way, because ultimately Kevin De Bruyne might just pull a bit of magic off, or Bernardo Silva or David Silva. And I don't think we've quite got that in midfield. We're a bit more workman-like. Again, it's the reason why I think Chamberlain at some point will be in the team to provide it. But we'll just beat you. We'll find a way to beat you. It doesn't matter if we have to. Do you want us to cross it 10 times, Sam? We'll cross it 10 times. Do you want us to start shooting from the edge of the box, Sam? We'll do that. Oh, you're going to play a high line. All the best. You know, we'll find a way to do yours. We talk about Norwich. Everyone knew Norwich couldn't defend set pieces, so Liverpool score off a set piece and make it look, you know, their Mark and Van Dijk with a fullback. Well, you know, congratulations, lads. We'll figure it out. I agree. James is right. Is that we've got a very smart team and a very smart manager. But ultimately, a lot of it just comes down to the final point he made, just re-emphasise. We've got world class footballers. And when you've got, there's at least four in our team at the moment, you know, Van Dijk in the front three, I think there's, without question. I think we've got world-class fullbacks actually as well.
I think Fabinho's world-class,
another one, and he was outstanding, by the way. So automatically there's seven world-class footballers rocking up to Burnley. Well,
and Trent, he's best right-back in the world, he's got to be world-class, surely.
Yeah.
Robertson, best left-back in the world, got to be world-class.
There you go. So all of a sudden you're rocking up, and there's your world-class footballers coming to play against Burnley, lads who aren't, well, you know, who haven't, they've got good footballers, they haven't got anywhere near this standard. So if you do your job correctly and you don't shoot yourself in the foot, then you're going to win. And that's the difference. That's just the difference in this Liverpool team than old ones. We're not going to shoot ourselves in the foot very often. We almost did it at Southampton and it nearly cost us. But other than that, we don't do it. So I'm amazed, actually, that how easy it was in the end. I was expecting Burnley Saturday night, you know, this could be, you know, and they, you know, Ashley Barnes has been, he scored every game. He's they've always scored goals against us. They've made it really difficult at times. I've been in that ground where they beat us and it's awful. It was straightforward. It was dead easy. And again, it was just because our top players, and you're from the back, so Van Dijk plays well, Fabinho plays well, really well. The front three play really well. It's almost academic, then, isn't it? If we can do that to teams and they allow us to do it, then we're going to win. That's how you get 97 points and win a European Cup, when your big players perform. And we made it, again, we made Burnley look like crap. No, we did. And I don't mean that's just... I'm a big Burnley fan. I think they're really good. And I'm a big Ashley Barnes fan. I think he's brilliant. But we just made them look like a poor team because we're just that much better than them.
Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about Man City and our rivals now. As it stands, though, Liverpool are top of the table with 12 points, Man City 10, Arsenal 7, 5 points behind after 4 games, Everton equally 5 points behind after 4 games, Manchester United are 7 points behind after 4 games, as are Chelsea, which is, it's quite laughable really how shit they all are, isn't it? they're dog shit. Lots of these teams.
We were touching on it in the office upstairs before. Like, I can't believe how mad some of the scores have been. Like, I know it's still early in the season, you know, we're just getting out of August, but some of these scores are mad. And like, I just, you know, we were talking about like the North London Derby and stuff, and just like neither of them teams knew how to defend yesterday. And I actually rate Spurs as a team, you know, especially that back line. Like, maybe they've lost some key parts of it. Like, but like, I just don't know what's going on. Like, it is such a two-horse race, I think, at the minute for the league. Like, and it's not even. I think like the big thing last year was the race for top four, and you know, as you get four into two, I think you could extend that now to like Wolves, Leicester, and people have sort of talked around it a little bit kind of this season. But honestly, I think you can, because I just think like you look at like, you know, the classically top four teams like Chelsea and Arsenal, and they've got elements of the teams that are brilliant, but then they've got other elements that are absolutely awful. Like, I've got no idea how Arsenal have gone into this season with the midfield they've got. It's just nuts. And that's before you get into the fact that they needed cover at centre-half. You
know, I saw someone talking the other day about a combined 11. It was a combined 11 between Arsenal and Tottenham. And you've probably seen this tweet, and the person was saying, how's Torreira not in this? Well, Torreira didn't even get a start for your team, never mind fucking Tottenham's, you know what I mean? And up until this point, in this game, I don't think he had a start. I can't remember if it was against us or against Spurs. And I'm like, he's not that good. He's just a bit shit. He's just a little scrappy dude, isn't he? You know what I mean? There's not much to him. Like. And you look at their sides, and all of them, you're right, all of them have got parts of their sides that are just shit. And I've been there, we've been there as a Liverpool fan when you've got some world-class players, and it's just not enough a lot of the time.
No, it's... The gap is massive. The gap between I'm a Pochettino fan. I quite like what Spurs do and stuff, but we're well better than them. We're well better. It doesn't City on a par with, and then everyone else. I think Tottenham are the third best team still, and then throw that on fourth to eighth. Like, are Chelsea better than Everton? I don't know. I would probably not. You know, and Chelsea finished third last year, didn't they, in the end?
Yeah.
At Arsenal, brilliant. I think they've got a brilliant front three. The back line is atrocious. Like, Granit Xhaka plays every week for them and he's crap. So that's the level.
Granit Xhaka would have taken Firmino out in the build.
He definitely would have. But we'd have been 4-0 up by then, so it wouldn't have mattered. I think what happens is, I think Liverpool and City are so good that it magnifies it a bit. Like, in years gone by, those teams would have been genuinely... not title contenders, but you'd have been in the mix for longer. I think the gap has just grown far.
Well, they're
too
all playing for 85 points as a week, a league winning point total. We're not, are we, James? Go on, you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, the thing is, yeah, we go back to the point before about how we've been through it before. That's why I really don't, I'm cool with like all fans and that, yeah. But you know what? In all your faces. Like, in all your faces. In the most respectful way possible. Listen, I'm good with everyone. I have no problems. I feel sorry for you. I've been there. We all know what it's like. We know the struggle. Listen, I've had to sift through Ricky Lambert, Balotelli, an injured Sturridge, and Fabio Barini. Now that's pain right there. That's hard times right there.
And you're trying to convince yourself that you might scrape fourth when you're 6 points behind with two games, and you think
that's exactly what it was.
And you rock up and Crystal Palace beat you, and you're that's where they are. And of all of them, it's United who were the worst.
Why are United the worst of them?
I think they've got a terrible manager.
Terrible in the field.
Where would you rank him?
I don't know how anyone could say that he's not one of the bottom three managers in the league. No, generally speaking. I think at the minute,
R.I.P. Steve's mentions.
It's people disagree with me. We've had the terrible manager. I've been through it, and I can see similarities. They've got world class players, maybe. They've got very, very good players who are play underperforming.
Who's their world class players? De Gea still.
If he went again, he's living a bit on reputation, isn't he? But I think he could be. Pogba could be. Talent wise, again, you've got to get the best out of him. I'm a big Rashford fan, but he's been a bit ordinary this year. And then the rest of it's crap. Like, their best player is their right-back, who makes 10 tackles, sound all the best. You'll come sixth with that.
Their best player is the new signing, Daniel James. He's been amazing
I get where they are. We've lived it. They are a Europa League squad. That's what they are. They're a Europa League team. Scott McTominay and Ander Pereira should not be starting games for Manchester United. But that's where they are. So, Sam, you get on with it. And we'll try and win the league, lads. And that's what it is. And they can all mess around and stuff. And again, it's not that far removed from the other way around. When they were battling, it was Chelsea, Arsenal, United to an extent, wasn't it? And they were laughing at us, going, enjoy your battle for sixth, and if you win the Europa League, all the best. You know what I mean? It's flip reversed, and it changes so quickly. I don't doubt for a second that at some point Man United will be a league champion again. And it'll probably be within 10 years, or it could be within 10 years. But there's no guarantees, because Liverpool should have won the league. You know, when we were crapping.
What are they on for now? Is this their sixth or seventh year without winning it? Because
13.
So we're coming up in a couple of months' time. It will be nearly 7 years.
And all of a sudden,
it turns to 30 quite quickly. Doesn't it? You know, that's how it starts. That is how it starts. Lads. We've literally been there, and you're thinking it'll be all right. We'll get one of these in a few years.
I know. I still haven't seen my team lift the league. It's half heavy.
That's the thing. It can happen. I wouldn't be surprised if they did it, but for the provision, I wouldn't be surprised if they never, because they look miles away. Like, how are they going to? How are they? What can they do to catch us and City now? What could they do? Who could they buy?
That's not what they should be aiming for.
No, and it's not.
Even if they can buy the players, I don't think they've got the right manager for the job.
Yeah, and it's quite funny, actually. I disagree. I'll go against what James says. I am quite happy to have a go at them because I hate them. So that's fine. I've been to their ground and I've took some stick at their ground, and rightly so, because we've been crap and they've been miles better than us. So I think we should enjoy it. I am amazed how poor the standard of the league is.
Is it poor?
I think it's improved. Like, do you know the
other
teams?
There was the six teams.
There was us, the standard six teams. Then there was Everton and kind of sniffing in and around. Yeah, and then but now I feel like everyone is either equally just as shit or equally just as good as each other. Mm. It's one or the other, and I feel like it is a bit of both. Like, yeah, I looked at the Chelsea Sheffield United game. I feel like that's just two teams that are kind of just as good as each other in some ways.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because Sheffield United shouldn't be as good as Chelsea Football Club, do you know what I mean? Mm. But you just saw the way they play football against Chelsea, and it weren't even like Chelsea were playing bad. It just looked like Sheffield United knew what to do.
Was anyone shocked at any results of the weekend? Like, genuinely shocked? I'm not shocked that Man United couldn't beat Southampton. That is not a shock at all.
I said it before.
I'm not shocked that Chelsea couldn't beat Sheffield United.
Yeah.
I was shocked at that. Just because they were 2-0.
Sheffield United have been good this season.
Beforehand, you said Sheffield United are going to get a draw at Stamford Bridge, you would have went, whoa. Like, if Sheffield United come to Anfield and get a draw, or next week City play Norwich, if they can get it, well, after the international break, you would be shocked if Norwich got something, or you would be shocked if Newcastle got something off Liverpool.
I'll tell you what the least shocking result was. City Brighton.
Oh yeah,
that was the least shocking result of the entire weekend.
And that's the thing, is that I might be doing the other teams a disservice. Maybe the standard of the league generally is better, which brings the gap, which makes.
But the gap between the top two in the league's never been bigger.
No,
that's the thing. I think the standard has improved.
It's almost.
But I think everybody else is. Yeah, it is. And everybody else has just gone back to the pack, and that's what it is. That's why you're laughing. I mean, you had the game in the North London Derby, the NLD, which was apparently a thing, like fucking, what was the Upton Park was all of a sudden called the bowling. And now the North London Derby has been the NLD for 2 or 3 years. And you're like, this wasn't what it was called, lads. You know what I mean? Shut the fuck up. Is this social media?
I think it is.
Like, right. When did West Ham start calling it the bowling? It was Upton Park, my entire life. The last year, they were like, the fucking bowling. It's like, what? Your fucking bowling ground. Shit, it was Upton Park, lads. Been there once, I know. I can't remember what I was talking about.
You were about to say how crap
it was. Just two teams just fucking going, you win. They're fucking shit. And he came diving, shock, nothing gets said, shock.
Oh, no, that was a mad game, that. Like, the weird thing is with this league, I think at the minute, like, James has sort of touched on it there. I think the worst league I've seen in recent memory, or certainly in the last 10 years or so, was the Leicester won it. And that to me was the worst league I've seen, because someone else should have stepped up and won that, and not them. And, you know, fair play to them.
Spurs ended up finishing third. That's how much they bottled it that year.
But I think this year, if you look at the league at the minute, like I think the standard actually has probably raised, and the quality level's raised. But I think, you know, taking us and City out of it completely at the minute, like, entertainment wise and for fans of those teams, it's such a better league. Because, I mean, like, for whatever fault you might say, put Lampard for Chelsea, or like, maybe he isn't going to be a great manager, we don't know yet, it's still too early, I think, to say, but he's given all the kids there a chance, which people have said for years, like, you know, they've got 40 people out on loan, all of a sudden you've got Tammy Abraham's playing every week, Mason Mount's playing, and they look good. And you know, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work, I don't know.
They've got the start of something at Chelsea, I think. That's the difference. At Man United, I don't think they've got the start of anything.
But to be fair to say, like, if you want to watch great players, you'll watch City and Liverpool. Mm. And if you want to watch really entertaining games, you'll watch everyone else. Like, Wolves, Everton's bananas, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just nuts. And then the North London Derby was mental. Chelsea, Sheffield United, mental. And that's probably what James said, actually, is that the rest of the league, Leicester can go and spend £40 million on Tielemans. Mm. I mean, that's never happened, has it? You know what I mean? Like, how can Wolves go and spend £30 million on Raul Jimenez? Everton can spend £50 million on Richarlison and go and sign Moise Keane or whoever they've got. The financial gap isn't there. It's still there to an extent, obviously, but if these teams can go and buy the difference-making players, so you can't just get by on having the better players now. You've also got to be a team. And that's, again, we've got world-class players and a world-class manager, and so have City. Everyone else has either got a bit of a mix of both, or good here and bad there, and I think we're going to see loads of really good games. I don't think Liverpool and City games are going to be that good. I think we're going to be much better than everyone we play. You're not going to get many 4-3s or something like that anymore. Everyone else, there's not a game in the world that I think I will be shocked if that team doesn't beat that team.
You sort of touched on it a little bit. Like, I was watching that debate you did with Sky, the fan channels and that. But like, they touched on it with the Zaha thing. It's like, you know, like, you sell him for £80 million, but being in the league's worth 130. So why sell him? And yeah, he's your star player. You might only win 1 in 3 games. You know, you get just about 40 points. You stay up. But I think the league's gone that way. I think the transfer market just going up slightly harder. Like, but the transfer market this year, I think, has been the most fascinating thing ever, because you've got that wage inertia thing now, where like, teams are like, well, we know you've got this money, so we want this. And teams are suddenly going, well, is Zaha really worth 80 million? You know what I mean? Like, Everton offering 70 for him. Is he really worth 80? Probably not, but that's what you'd have to pay to get him, and teams haven't got to do that anymore. So now you've got, you know, a whole swathe of teams. Like, you know, you can pick through that Leicester side, and like, that is a top four side. You go back,
even two years,
that would have been a top four side easily. But now it's a thing of, you look at like Everton are quietly in decent form, you know what I mean? And they're doing good stuff. And then you've got Spurs. Their form since the turn of this year has been shocking. And it's weird how much the league's levelled out, but you've just got these two outlier teams, who I suppose are sort of grown players in our manager. And, you know, obviously Pep's got his way and has spent the money and stuff, and that people forget that was getting put in place for him before he even joined the club. So it's just mad. But I think the league as in terms of standard, I think it's just leveled out completely, because there's not many teams really you can easily say are better than the other. If only for Europa League football, I would look at Cerca Wolves and go, like, they play a slightly different way, you know, to the theatre back thing, and they do something a bit, and they've actually got quite a good squad. But I think that Europa League stuff might affect them a bit personally. But
wrap it up, I'd rather have Leicester squad than United's, than Chelsea's.
Than Chelsea's?
Right now, yeah.
Who do you think is the better manager out of the three of them clubs?
Rogers. Rogers by far. I think Nuno's a good manager. It's mad that United and Chelsea have got two of the probably the worst or least experienced.
Lampard has potential though. Like, least experience,
he might, but then he hasn't won a game. You know, he's won one game, so, and he won one game against a pretty poor Norwich team.
Nah, that's a good point.
So, I like it because it's like you look like Madrid and Barcelona are having the same thing in their league at the minute. I'm buying about the same thing where they've both had great teams, or they've all had great teams, and they're at the stage now where they've just got to build something completely new and just see what happens. And there's no easy way to do it. You can't just suddenly go out. You've seen the death of that club that can go out and just go, right, we're going to buy this lad. Here's 50 million, here's 50, and you just can't do anything about it. That's gone now. Like, all these teams are just, you know, who used to be in the big clubs are kind of going, what do we do? And that's happening throughout Europe, I think, but it's also happening within our own league where you're having, like look at Wolves coming up, the team they've built. They came up with a team that was way better than the Championship when they were in the Championship. And, like, you know, I'm not going to pretend I knew who Nuno was before he came to this league, but, like, he's clearly a good manager, you know what I mean? And, like, the attraction for him, I think, to that job is that, you know, I can basically have players that are, you know, 30, 40 million pound players and coach them into doing something really good, you know what I mean? And I won't get that in Spain. I'll get lads who are 5 million and I've got to struggle to get them to be the level of that. And that's what the money's done to the league, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that a fascinating last 15 minutes of the show again. Leave us your thoughts on everything we've discussed in the comments section. Don't forget to go over and check out the redmentv.com. We do the instant match reaction, the one that we used to do on YouTube. That goes out on the website and in the podcast players for subscribers straight after the game, of course. I'll be doing a stats and tactics show later on. We'll be diving in depth and detail once again into the 3-0 rout of Burnley and really finding out how Liverpool tactically went at Burnley. And there'll be goals explained over on the YouTube channel as well. Thank you for joining me, gents. Thank you as well for joining me. And we'll see you next time on the Red Men TV. Thanks very much. Ta-ra.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.